Okay, so if you all couldn't hear that, we are recording this conference. Let's go ahead and get started. Rosie, why don't you kick us off explaining the survey and how we did it?
Okay, great. Thank you, Archie, and thanks for all those who are participating on this call. So as you all know, there have been some significant changes in the policies that are impacting significantly immigrant victims. And really, you know, as you have heard from our organizations, we're very focused on making sure that any and all victims, regardless of immigration status or, you know, any other situation, can access critical services for their safety and health of themselves and their children. And Congress created, in a bipartisan fashion, important remedies for immigrant victims through the Violence Against Women Act and through the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. And as you are aware, there's a very strong network of service providers all over the country that seek to serve all victims of different crimes, whether it's domestic violence, sexual assault, trafficking, or stalking. After the executive orders were released by this administration and other policies went into effect, really increasing enforcement and really eliminating priorities and making it clear that any and all individuals who are unauthorized essentially could be considered a priority. These increased enforcement actions led to a lot of fear that we were hearing around the country. We were hearing from advocates, from programs all over the country, asking for guidance and support on how best to help survivors who are expressing increased fears and concerns about whether they could reach out for services. And as we know, abusers have always exploited immigrant victims' immigration status as a tool of power and control. And so we're very concerned that those tools of abusers essentially are sharpened when victims are too afraid to seek services and get help. In response to a lot of the questions we were getting around the country, we decided to develop this survey to get a better feel for the trends and get a pulse of what advocates were seeing in their communities. So our organizations jointly developed a survey and sent that out. It was open from April 12th to the 25th of April, 2017, and focused on what people were seeing as a result of recent policy changes. And just to give you a little bit of a background in terms of who answered, we had we had 715 individuals, and it was focused on advocates and attorneys who completed the survey. 73% were victim service provider organizations, 11% were legal service providers, and 12% came from agencies that were provided holistic services, legal and social. They were asked whether their agency was observing a change in the number of immigration-related questions from survivors, and 62% did say that they were seeing an increase in the number of immigration-related questions from survivors coming to their agencies. They were asked, are immigrant survivors sharing with your agency that they have concerns about contacting the police? And 78% of the respondents said yes, that they did see that the survivors were sharing these concerns about contacting the police. Additionally, they were asked, are survivors reporting to your agency that they have concerns about going to court for a matter related to the abuser or offender? 75% of respondents said yes, that they were hearing these concerns from the survivors. And as you can see on the fact sheet that we put out, there are some specific quotes from the respondents regarding what they were hearing from survivors. They were also asked, are you or your organization working with immigrant survivors in your community who have decided to drop civil or criminal cases because they are fearful to continue with their cases? And 43% said yes, they did have survivors who were dropping their cases as a result of their concerns and fears. And then we did ask another question that's not on the fact sheet, I just want to share with you all, and it's, are there local allies in your community who are working to support immigrant survivors to access safety and protections? And 81% did answer yes. And I think that it's really important that we just want to affirm that there is tremendous commitment from organizations all over the country to continue to work together to make sure that all survivors, regardless of immigration status, can access critical services. But these policies are definitely, as we can see in this survey, having a detrimental impact. So thank you. I'll hand it back to you, Archie.
Thank you so much, Rosie. Now, for those who didn't join us at the very beginning, let me just let you know what we're going to do is we heard from Rosie now from Casa de Esperanza, and we're going to hear now from Cecilia Levin of ASISTA, who will give us a little more information about what the results mean And then from Grace from API GBV, who will let us know how this relates to some of the bills being debated in Congress right now and what the public policy implications are. Finally, we will open it up to questions, and we can take your questions at that time. So, Cecilia, could you give us a couple minutes about the impact, what this means?
Yes, thank you, Archie, and thank you all for being on the call this morning. And I think when we're thinking about the impact of this survey, that we have just to recognize a few things. The first one is that one of the weapons of abuse that domestic violence perpetrators use those without secure immigration status is to threaten them with deportation if they attempt to access safety and protection for themselves and for their children. And to combat this, since the original Violence Against Women Act in 1994, there has been a tremendous effort to encourage and to enhance community policing and safe courthouse environments. And these efforts to make survivors aware of services and protections build relationships and trust with immigrant communities and to ensure that their rights are protected. And the results of the survey are troubling. They are troubling because it represents that there is uncertainty and distrust around the institutions and the systems that are supposed to provide them with protection and safety. And so when this exists, when this uncertainty and this distrust exists, when a significant segment of our population lives in fear, it makes our communities less safe. And so I think that there has to be a fundamental understanding that all survivors of domestic violence should be able to seek the protections afforded to them by law without fear that accessing these services and accessing these institutions will make them worse off. And to be able to access these institutions, access, you know, safety from abuse without fear of being removed and separated from their family. So I'll stop there, and I'm happy to take any other questions as we go.
Thank you so much, Cecilia. Let's move now to Grace from API GBV to put some of this information and the impact in context, especially given some of the bills that are being debated right now on the Hill. Go ahead, Grace.
Hi, thank you. It's hard to know where to start with all the legislation that's pending as well as the budget release that is, you know, came out, part of it last night and more this morning. And so I'm going to try to tie our survey results in the context of both the immigration bills as well as the budget. Right as we speak right now, the House Judiciary Committee in Congress is debating three bills. The first one, H.R. 2431, the Davis-Oliver bill, as well as H.R. 2407, the USCIS Reauthorization Act, and H.R. 2406, the ICE Reauthorization Act. And all three of these bills really show an increase of emphasis on enforcement and further the administration's focus on deportation and detention. In particular, H.R. 2431, the Mass Deportation Act, really harnesses the resources of local law enforcement to act as ICE agents and gives them authority to detain and turn people over to immigration for detention and removal. And we have extreme concerns given what we're already seeing from the survey results about victims being fearful of calling the police, of asking for assistance from law enforcement for domestic violence, for sexual assault, and other violent crimes. To that end, even local law enforcement officers and officials have expressed their concern that H.R. 2431 distracts from their local ability to provide for public safety and drives victims further underground. We also know from the ICE authorization bill, H.R. 2406, that there's a big ramp up of aggressive enforcement. It provides authority for an additional 10,000 deportation officers. and the H.R. 2407, the USCIS Reauthorization Act, increases resources for verification of people's identities, and also takes the services part of the immigration agencies towards enforcement as well. And so, you know, we are really concerned about all of the emphasis that there is on detention and deportation. Even the budget that was released with respect to Department of Homeland Security, it provides $2.6 billion for new border security infrastructure, an additional $300 million to hire more agents and officers, $1.5 billion for expanded detention. And we know that given all of the emphasis and the media and the attention to enforcement really is striking fear in immigrant communities as well as driving victims underground. And our concern is that also with respect to reductions in the safety net and resources for our communities, for victims, that victims will be less able to be able to seek resources to recover from abuse, to be able to escape abuse, to be able to get health care, to be able to get basic food and you know, housing, the critical things that victims need. So I welcome any questions. Of course, with respect to the budget, we are still looking for a lot of the detail, and we can talk. But we can talk about the implications of reductions in safety net as well as increased resources in enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Grace. And we're going to open it up for questions now. But so I can remind you, in addition to the three speakers you've just heard from, you also have on the phone Terry from the National Alliance to End Sexual Violence, Monica from the National Network to End Domestic Violence, and Kudzia from the National Domestic Violence Hotline, who all participated in the survey as well. So let me go ahead and open it up. If anybody has a question, just introduce yourself and go ahead and ask.
This is Lisa from the Tennessee Immigrant and Refugee Rights Coalition. Thanks so much for sharing that. It's been really helpful, and we're about to introduce a local policy to disentangle federal immigration enforcement from our local government. But one of the things that we're running up against when we're looking at the deviant SV data is that according to the police reports, there hasn't been a decline in the number of immigrant reports on those issues, and so they're saying there's actually not a problem of trust in the community. Of course, we have questions about that data and how it was collected or how it's marked, but how would you sort of combat that? Because, you know, we believe, obviously, that because of your survey and what we've seen across the country and from what we know from our members, that people are afraid to report crimes. And so is there any sort of messaging you would use, or how would you sort of push against that narrative?
Rosie, would you like to take a crack at that one?
So it's a good question. And in which jurisdiction are you speaking about in particular? You're saying a specific community where the local...
Yeah, here in Nashville. Mm-hmm.
In Nashville, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly we are seeing differences in different jurisdictions around the country, depending what kind of an effort really is being made at the local level to send a message to immigrant survivors that services are available for them, you know, where they also can access victim services that are culturally and linguistically accessible, where, you know, police chiefs have made statements to the effect that they welcome, you know, any and all victims and witnesses to come forward, and that immigration status should not be a deterrent. And I think the Center for American Progress, in fact, put out some really good materials demonstrating that jurisdictions that, in fact, have better community policing policies have lower crime rates and do have more people coming forward. So it's important, you know, to recognize that local policies are critical. At the same time, as we saw in our survey, for example, the fact that a woman who was seeking order of protection was arrested in the courthouse in El Paso up on the 10th floor where, right, you know, as she was emerging from getting an order of protection against an abuser. When that goes out, you know, in the media nationally, many times people don't know how to distinguish whether that now will become a policy in their own community you know, people oftentimes don't know where the jurisdictional boundaries end of one community and the others begin. So negative impact, you know, hateful rhetoric, language that discourages people from seeking help can have a negative impact, you know, in all our communities, regardless of what local policies are. So I think there's, you know, it's both, you know, some positive steps that can be taken in local communities, but the really great concern that a lot of what's happening nationally also has a negative impact. I don't know if others want to add, excuse me, any other comments.
No, I think you, this is Grace, I think you hit it.
Thanks,
right,
Rosie. Thanks, Grace. Yep, absolutely. Anyone else have a question?
Hello? Hi.
Hi, hello, welcome.
Thank
Could you introduce yourself for us, please?
Yeah, I'm Jimena Garcia from the Mexican Embassy, and I'd like to know if we can get the fact sheet of the results of the survey later.
Yes, absolutely. It was sent around, it's linked to inside the notice that you should have received, which sent you the call, so you should be able to find it. But if you need it, please let us know your email address, and we'll be able to get that to you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else have a question about the survey results or any of the bills that are moving in Congress or anything else?
This is Rosie. I would like to, since we have Katsia from the hotline, you know, if folks don't have another question at this moment, Katsia, I'd love to perhaps have you share with the listeners a little bit of what you all are seeing and hearing on the hotline nationally.
Great.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Rosie. So what we're hearing on the hotline is actually just a microcosm of a lot of what we're seeing through this report that was just issued on a daily basis. So immigrant callers and loved ones and family members of immigrant survivors are actually a really large number of our callers just in the last year. We had 7,000 callers and texters and chatters that reached out about immigration-related issues to us, and what we're hearing is exactly what we're seeing through this survey. So we've seen a lot of folks reach out and ask specifically for what they can do outside of the legal system because they're afraid of deportation or they're afraid of law enforcement, and they've been hearing a lot about rape. And so unfortunately, we're having to work with our advocates to try to work on safety planning outside of legal recourse, which they ideally should be able to access, but they are too fearful to do so right now.
Thanks, Katsia.
Thanks, Katsia. Are there any other questions? If not, I might ask Cecilia if you could perhaps give us a little more information about what this means about victims and their ability to call 911 and why calling 911 or not calling 911 might make us all less safe. You said that in your comments, but I wonder if you could expand on that a little bit.
I think, you know, when we're talking about, you know, calling 911 in particular and having law enforcement of people arrive at home, and I think that there is a, you know, often for a whole host of different reasons, for linguistic barriers or other barriers that exist, that there might be the risk that the survivor is either if there's a confusion of some kind of entanglement between the goal of the law enforcement or two, and I think
Cecilia, I'm sorry. Unfortunately, we're having a very hard time hearing you. I'm sorry. I don't know if it's the connection.
Okay.
Maybe you can just talk a little louder.
Sure. Is this better?
Yes, much better. Thank you.
Okay. Perfect. And I think
honestly, if you could start over, that would be great. I couldn't hear a word. Glenn Garvin,
okay,
Miami
no,
Herald.
No, I'm glad to do so. And I think basically is the continuation of the fear that we are talking about previously about calling 911 and just an uncertainty about what that means in this current climate. There is an uncertainty in terms of whether or not there's going to be asked about immigration status or for oftentimes what happens, especially in situations where
A domestic violence survivor might have language barriers or other barriers where the abuser can kind of just say that, you know, have the victim arrested, the survivor arrested, and so therefore there's going to be consequences in terms of enforcement prioritization. There may be. So I think that calling 911 is part of the calculation that we're talking about, is reaching out to the police generally for help, reaching out to the court for help, is just this uncertainty and distrust whether or not that will make the situation somehow worse for them by bringing them the attention to immigration enforcement or otherwise having unintended consequences that could put them in a worse situation than before, than if they didn't reach out for help, which has the unintended consequence, which has the consequence, as Great mentioned, of just further pushing survivors into the shadows. I don't know if that's, if anyone else has more to add to that.
Thanks, Cecilia. That's really helpful. You know, this is Archie again from Tahrir Justice Center. One of the questions I've gotten a lot as I've been working on this issue is that, you know, I'm an advocate for victims, right? I work with victims of domestic and sexual violence every day. Why, as an advocate for victims, would I be opposed to 2431 and other other bills and policy measures that seem to be seeking to keep victims safe? I don't know, Grace, if you would like to speak at all to, you know, what are we really doing when we're talking about 2431? Who are the people we're trying to protect, and how can we do that better?
Well, as we know from years of work with victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, I mean, one of the, you know, major tools that, I mean, we've heard over and over again, the tools that abusers use is threats to turn people over to immigration enforcement or in other contexts, you know, to retaliate against victims for speaking up or, try to seek help. And so the reality is that immigrant victims often don't, you know, aren't aware of the protections that exist for them. And so while we've worked very, very hard to do that, to create protections for victims and to ensure that our local systems, whether they be, you know, services or protection orders or criminal penalties, et cetera, protect victims. Often victims aren't aware of all of the things that are available for them. But specifically related to H.R. 2431, there are a lot of things that it does that will likely sweep up victims who have not yet reached out for help into the detention and deportation machine. For example, H.R. 2431 expands criminal penalties for being in the country without authorization. Now, certainly victims are often... I've worked with survivors who have been brought into the country by their abusers or have been, whether on an immigrant visa or on a non-immigrant visa or, smuggled across the border. We know that, having people that are, picked up collaterally in sweeps and in... detention activities will result in other folks who don't have any criminal history being detained, including survivors who may not have been able to access help yet. There, gives a lot more authority for local law enforcement to be asking people about their immigration status, to detain people they find who are undocumented, and to detain them for ICE. Davis-Oliver Act also punishes local communities that are trying to keep communities safe by, not collaborating with ICE. And I do want to flag something that we just found in the budget, that budget document that was released earlier, which is there's a expansion in the administration's budget proposal of 8 U.S. Code 1373, which is the provision relating to ICE and local law enforcement collaboration, that which means, you know, when the Department of Justice has interpreted those who violate, you know, that have sanctuary who are sanctuary jurisdictions to be those that violate 8 U.S. Code 1373. And so what the budget just does now is greatly expand what that means. And it slipped into this big bill that folks may want to take a look at because it's, you know, with all the activity happening today relating to the budget, that might be a provision that's not noticed. So I just want to flag that for folks. I mean, I'm happy to talk with folks offline later about that because it's a big expansion. Thanks.
Thank you, Grace. Let me invite any questions from those who are here from the media. Okay. Terry or Monica from National Alliance to End Sexual Violence or National Network to End Domestic Violence, did you want to add any reflections on the survey or anything else that's, that you'd like to add at this moment?
This is Terry, and I can just add a big picture concern from the perspective of the Rape Crisis Centers and local communities, which is they have really asked us to look into this issue because they are, you know, hearing every day the stories of survivors who are afraid to come forward and report. They're also trying to do sexual assault prevention in their communities, and they know if people don't feel safe to report crimes and come forward, that there's absolutely no way that they can do the work they need to do to prevent sexual assault and sexual abuse in their communities. So I just wanted to bring the perspective that sexual assault programs across the United States are very concerned about what this means for community safety.
This is Monica. I think just hearing, you know, we did the survey because we were hearing a lot from our local programs and our state domestic violence coalitions about concerns that they had, and they were hearing from survivors, and so we really felt like we needed to get some numbers behind the kind of anecdotes that we were hearing, and in fact, of course, the survey does confirm lots of what we were hearing. Our membership is also incredibly concerned that some of the most vulnerable folks in our country facing domestic violence are those whose abusers have additional tools to keep them trapped. And so, of course, being an immigrant survivor who may not have documented status, they are more concerned than other survivors might be about the control that their perpetrator has over them. So. We support what Grace was talking about around the legislation. We know that legislation that, you know, continues to make enforcement harsher and less targeted means that survivors are swept up and makes them more fearful to engage with law enforcement and with the legal community. And that means that survivors are, you know, in the shadows and that perpetrators can go free. So we certainly have been hearing from our membership about that, and this is a major priority for our Advocacy Day in the next coming months. So thanks.
Okay, one last call for any press questions before we wrap up. All right, let me say thank you so much for joining us. I think we've communicated a great deal of information about the survey, about why we did it and what the results are, as well as sharing with you some of our concerns about these bills that are masquerading as attempting to protect our communities, but in fact will have the consequence of unfortunately leaving many immigrant victims and others of us less safe. If you have any questions, you can reach out to Rebecca Stewart at rebekahs@tahereh.org, and she can help field questions to all the participants on the call. Any other questions or comments, just let us know. Thank you so much, everyone, and have a great day.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.